This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon and welcome to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We are live at the Beacon Building. We're located right at 814 Elm Street, right in the downtown area. You can come on down, have some lunch at Midtown Cafe, and you can sit and watch the show at the same time. It's an absolutely gorgeous day out there. We've been having really nice weather.
We have, and there's more of it on the way. Might see some thunderstorms today.
That's what they're saying. It doesn't look it out there when you look up, but maybe later, you know.
We need it badly. I mean, you're a gardener, so you appreciate...
No, I'm not a gardener.
Well, you like to grow things.
Well, they're already grown when I get them. They're just flowers.
So plants?
Oh. They're my flowers on my porch and, you know, on my driveway.
Yeah. You have a lawn, don't you?
I don't do that. I have a guy that does that.
All right. But the guy can't bring water.
No.
You're right. Need a little assist from Mother Nature.
Yes. Yes. Of course. Yes. But I'm definitely not a gardener. And when I get like a house plant, I kill it.
I do. But you have a touch with the outdoor plants.
I do. Well, you water them every day. And I take care of them.
That
I pick them.
Something.
But anyway. Yeah.
I feel like we're slacking. This is only the second day we've worked this week, and it's Thursday.
Isn't it weird? It's like a weird... You know, when I was upstairs, I'm like, all right, I got to go down to the studio. I mean, usually every day it's like just rote, you know, but today it was like a little, you know, a little.
Well, the Red Sox preempted us yesterday. We would have provided better entertainment, as it turns out, but that's a whole different story.
Poor Red Sox.
I know. You didn't go to the beach, though, right?
I did not go to the beach. I was going to go to the beach. And, you know, June wasn't able to go. And then I was still going to go. And then I thought, you know, in the morning I woke up and I said, I had things to do, so I did my errands throughout the day, and it was good.
Barb and I went to Portsmouth for the day, which is just a little bit further from where you would have been anyway, and I figured you were just out, and that was it. But, we just were in the mood to sit on a patio overlooking the bay or the Piscataqua River. And that's what we did. I just ate so much fried fish and chips yesterday, and then a glass of wine. I just kind of rolled around Market Square. I said, I got to sit down. Too much fried food, too much alcohol. But you know what it made me realize yesterday is if you go to Portsmouth before or after tourist season, oh, my God, it's so much more pleasant.
It is.
There, you can get in and out of traffic easily. You can find a place to park. You can get a table without waiting 15 minutes on a nice sunny day. You're not bumping into people in the shops.
True.
And I rarely have gone outside of tourist season, which has got another couple weeks before schools are out. So it was a good learning experience.
Nice. And Portsmouth is just... Well, you know, our guests that we've had on, you know, recently just talk about, you know, I'm missing my words here. But, well, the dining there, how it's just...
You can't keep up with it.
You cannot keep up with it.
Kind of like Manchester.
The growth of the dining in Portsmouth is just, it's going berserk.
But, it was one of the most expensive housing markets for a while, maybe 10, 15 years ago. I mean, it still is expensive. You really can't move into the really... fun part of town, unless you got some dough. But
today is, I was already in Londonderry this morning. I was there this morning with my director of operations. We were conducting their monthly inspection.
This is the Red Arrow now.
The Red Arrow Diner.
Yep.
Red Arrow Diner in Londonderry. And I will be going there right after the show today because it's our grand opening today. Today and tomorrow. And it starts at 2, but things probably won't be getting going too much.
You know, so you get there.
It's for like the whole travel center. So,
oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay,
so
the liquor store and the service plaza.
And the travel, the gas station.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Governor Hassan is going to be arriving.
Nice.
She's going to take a walk through. She's going to do our ribbon cutting at 4:15, and then she'll be taking a walk through the travel center, the diner, and the liquor store. So
you wanted to get some pictures of her with some Dyna Fingers,
and
right?
And we are going to have Dyna Fingers.
You need
out.
To do that. That'll be awesome.
So cool.
I don't know. Well, I would think she does. I mean, it's not like she's endorsing everything she ever picks up.
No.
It's just a fun photo op.
Exactly.
Social media gets out there. They like Dyna Fingers. They like
so
the governor.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you happen to watch The Briefcase last night?
Well, I'm aware. I didn't see it, but I know that we had a local family on.
Yes. Well, I had heard it yesterday morning on another station.
Uh-huh.
And they had interviewed the man from Manchester, the husband.
Yes.
And so anyway, so
it's a reality show.
It's a reality, yes. So I said, you know what? I'd like to kind of watch it. It sounded kind of intriguing. They get handed a briefcase. and they tell them, you know, they pretty much ring their doorbell.
$101,000.
$101,000, right. And they said it is 100% yours. You just have to do three things.
Right.
You need to three
options, three possibilities
to answer. You decide you're going to keep it 100%, you're going to give it away all to a needy, a more needier family than yourself, or you're going to keep some of it and give some of it away.
Yes,
you know?
Those are the three choices.
And, well, it was something else, because it was Manchester, New Hampshire couple and a couple in North Carolina.
So they had another couple. It was like two pairs, right?
Yep. Okay. And both of them were, you know, somewhat needy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, both families had issues, but both families did not know that the other ones existed.
Yes.
So, you know, and they had to do, you know, the first, and they handed him a cell phone and said, you know, throughout the next 72 hours, make sure you have a phone, because we're going to be giving you instructions. So first instruction comes, and they say, you know, to the Manchester couple, I don't remember what their names were, but to the wife, you, without your husband, take the briefcase now, you go to the bank and decide what you're keeping and what you're giving. Now, they had kind of discussed it, and the Manchester couple was funny, because she wanted to keep it.
Yes.
She's like, we need this. And he's like, we're giving it away 100%. You're crazy.
And
like,
his story is he's a war veteran who lost one of his legs.
Yep. Yep.
So that was kind of the heart tug part of that relationship.
It was. And they live in a condo or an apartment, third floor, no elevator. She's 8 months pregnant. They struggle,
right.
Well, North Carolina couple, pretty much the same scenario.
Okay.
You know, he's out of work. She's the only breadwinner. He drives an ice cream truck in the season time.
Okay.
And the ice cream trucks are you know, falling apart and don't work and all this. So anyway, so get to the, well, so this is what I was going to get at. So the third one, well, the second one, when the husband, then they had to do it with the husband. The husband had to decide what he was keeping, what he was giving, go to the bank, you know, So they're meeting back. You know, because now after he goes to the bank, he meets with his wife to tell him what he did. So Daryl and I are sitting there, we're watching it, and all of a sudden they flash on the screen a beautiful outdoor, you know, scene of the Red Arrow Diner.
No way!
The neon.
Which
and everything.
One?
Manchester. And I'm like, that's the Red Arrow. I'm like, stop it. So, you know, and it was so...
TV?
It was so cool.
Well, why was
it? Hold on. She was meeting him at the Red Arrow
Diner.
They filmed inside the Red Arrow. I had no idea this was going on.
Because nobody was supposed to know. They had to keep it secret.
I guess. So.
And they did this, I want to say, in April? I think
they did it. No. 8 weeks ago.
Wow. So which was April. It was April. No, March.
Yeah, like February, March. They said towards the end of, probably like March. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. So they see the cameras like going inside the front doors.
So nobody told you?
Nobody told
you. None of your employees told you that?
I'm sitting there. That's what I said. I'm like, who the heck was
Somebody could have.
And I was trying, when we were watching it, I was trying to see who was working to say, why didn't you tell me this was happening?
I'm busted.
It was like, but you didn't see it. They pretty much, you know, you clearly could, they showed the outside and then the inside.
Mm-hmm.
You see curtains and you see Red Arrow menu. And
you get more darn publicity, I'm telling you. Yeah, that's great.
Like the coolest
thing. I wonder, it's probably available on demand or it can
well,
be found.
Amanda's researching it, so we're going to link,
well,
you know,
have it. Well, that's very cool.
Very, very cool. I mean, they could have picked anywhere to go
Sure.
eat. And do that. And they picked my diner.
It just shows, you know, how popular it is on any given day.
Yeah.
You know, who knows who's going to be there.
So let's, because I discussed it and talked about the premise. So they meet.
Okay.
The
families
last,
meet, right?
The last step was they got the instructions and said, tomorrow morning you're flying out. You are going to North Carolina. You're going to New Hampshire. But remember, either one don't know they exist.
Okay.
So New Hampshire goes to North Carolina. They pull up in front of their house and they say, no one's home. We want you to go in. We want you to see how they live. They're like, all right. They go in. They see their house. And the North Carolina people, the outside of their house, kind of looked a little nice.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife, because she wanted to keep it all, she's like, well, look at their house, how nice it is. They don't really need this. But when you went in, you could tell. Things were needing repair. They had no washer dryer. Looked at their bills. They have no health insurance. You know, anyway, and you get the gist back and forth. The new North Carolina saw them, and they're all like, you know, da-da-da. So now they meet up. They meet up, and they sit down in front of one another. Now they think that they're meeting the other one as the couple that need, you know, doesn't have any, you know, needs more stuff than they do.
Yeah.
They don't know that.
Did these North Carolina people get to visit the New Hampshire house?
Oh, yeah. They did the same thing.
So same thing.
They did the same thing. So they meet up, but they just think that the other one is the one that they're deciding to give it to or not. They don't realize that they both started with $100,000.
Okay.
So what do you think they did?
Well, I have a feeling that they kept some of it and gave some to the other couple.
Each one?
Each one, yes.
They both 100% were giving it to the other person.
So they ended up with the money anyway.
Each ended up with $100,000. Yeah. When the first one started telling the story, she's like, well, 3 days ago we were given $100,000. Mm-hmm. And then the other couple's like, we were given $100,000. So then they realize what happened. And then they're both sitting with a suitcase. So you're like, what did they do? You know, and wow. Both of them are like, what did you do? What did we know we did?
That's
what did
cool.
you do? They opened it up and they've each got the same amount.
So let me ask you, there was another couple, another pair, right?
The North Carolina pair.
Oh, so it was just, the show was just them, because I thought there
just
was another.
Them. North Carolina couple, okay. Manchester couple.
So there'll be more shows probably.
I'm sure they must
I'm
have taped.
Guess.
They must have
yeah.
taped, you know, because it's going to be on
wow.
again next week.
Okay, so, all right, got it.
So it was very
wow.
cool.
Well, thanks for the update on
yeah.
that for those of us
yeah.
that missed it last night. Meant to watch it, totally forgot it was on.
Yeah, I had taped it, and then we started watching it about 8:20, But yeah, but we were talking about Red Arrow. So today there is going to be a ribbon cutting today, big grand opening at the Red Arrow. And listen, listeners, if you don't have anything planned for later or even all day today and all day tomorrow, you can go to the Red Arrow in Londonderry. You get free raffle. Everybody that walks in the diner gets a raffle to be put into a big hat. And there's a ton of prizes. I mean, Coke supplied us with a ton of stuff. Their gas purveyors provided a ton of stuff. And one of the grand prize winners will get free breakfast for two for a year.
Oh, I thought you were going to say
Diner.
A briefcase filled with $100,000.
Yeah.
All right, so free breakfast for a year every
yes,
week.
Yes, every week, yes.
That's nice.
And Governor Hassan is going to be there today at 4:30. So, cool,
some,
cool.
Some so partying going on, because I remember we did a ribbon cutting back in March.
Yes, that was the chamber ribbon cutting.
Yes.
Right? Yep, that
wow.
was fun.
The fun just continues.
Want something
five.
Funny?
What?
My brother celebrated his birthday at the Red Arrow Diner in Manchester on March 30th. Now, as you know, I celebrated my birthday at the Red Arrow Diner in Londonderry.
Right.
Now, we met up a couple weeks ago for pizza, and I had told him about the Red Arrow Diner in Londonderry. He had no idea, since his girlfriend is going to be working in the Londonderry area in the coming months. So now, and I told him about the drive, because he loves the Red Arrow Diner. He loves the Red Arrow Diner coffee. That's his favorite coffee.
Oh, jeez.
And I told him about the Red Arrow Diner in Londonderry in the drive-thru. He's like, sold. I'm going to go there every chance I get once my girlfriend gets her job in the Londonderry area. So you'll be seeing plenty of my brother and his business and the amount of business that he's going to be having there and in the coming months. So.
Very cool. And for listeners out there that don't, well, you should recognize the voice by now, but that's J-Dog. That's our producer over in Bow, manning all of the boards for us. Mm-hmm. So, all right. I think our next guest is waiting.
Yeah, I do. We just quickly, the food holiday.
You know what? Food holiday today is National Hamburger Day.
Oh.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
It's National Hamburger Day, and it's also National Brisket Day.
Oh, both wonderful
yes,
cuts of meat.
Yes, and I do have some hamburger trivia, but we can save that for another time.
Yeah.
You know, hamburgers, summer.
We have, grilling. I mean, literally, we have, I think, four guests today.
We do, so we need to get our butts going.
Okay. Spoken like a true manager.
You're listening to Food for Thought. We're live at the Beacon Building, 107.7 FM. We'll be right back with Michael Hopley-Pierce. It's a brand new segment that we are actually introducing, and it's On Tap with Michael. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's Food for Thought at 1230 WTPL. 107.7 The Pulse, brought to you by Express Jewelry Center on South Main Street, Concord, and Puerto Vallarta Mexican Grill on 2nd Street in Manchester. Authentic Mexican at incredible prices. And Mexican food always goes so well with cerveza.
And beer.
And beer, too, yes.
Right? And
not
beer.
Mutually exclusive.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this is very exciting today because I'd like to announce that we have a new, it's going to be an every other week segment on Food for Thought, and it's going to be called On Tap with Michael. Let me introduce Michael Hopley-Pierce, host of the Tap Handle Show on It's On Podcast. It's about beer, and himself along with Tim Roberts are educating the world about beer, and now Food for Thought every other week will be educated as well. So let me welcome Michael Hopley-Pierce.
Thank you so much. This is an amazing opportunity. I really appreciate you guys giving it to me.
Wow.
Well, you're a sort of a broadcaster in your own way, because the trend now is to do internet shows or podcasts that can be listened to at the listener's convenience.
It seems like people wear their busyness like a badge of honor, and it makes it more difficult to get content when you're always on the go. And so it seems more people are opting to be able to do it at 2 o'clock in the morning or 5 minutes at a time at their leisure. So we've had a really great one. We've had a lot of fun with it, and it allows us a little bit more freedom, as we don't have the FCC telling us that word's inappropriate, that content is inappropriate, that topic's inappropriate. So we kind of veer towards the inappropriate.
Yeah. And, you know, listeners, so that, you know, if you have any questions about beer, this is the guy, I'm sure, to ask. So I'm going to give the phone number, 866-823-1077. Again, 866-823-1077. And, you know, talking about that, don't you guys, like, drink beer when you're doing your podcast as
we
well?
We do.
See,
we absolutely
can't do that either.
That's actually when Tim Roberts came up with the idea for the show, and I knew him through a networking organization I'm on the director team for with him, and he actually owns the organization, BNI. And he had approached me about doing the show and said, I don't really know how I want to do it, but I certainly have the podcasting experience and the understanding of how to get the content out into the world, and let's develop something that's a little different than what's out there. So we wanted to make sure it was structured where it wasn't just about pairing beer or tasting beer or brewing beer. We wanted to have a little bit of all of that, but we wanted to have people be able to have segments that they looked forward to seeing in upcoming weeks. And one of those segments is when we drink beer on the air and we review it, and that's the draft pick of the week.
Draft pick of the week.
Oh, yeah. I'm a horrible punner, so everything is
Roger Goodell will be in touch for stealing.
I pay a lot less for my draft picks, actually.
I hope so.
So that's kind of an integral part of our show, and we don't dissect it and totally geek out too hard, but it's a good opportunity for people to maybe hear a review of something that they've been thinking about. If it's a $15 bottle of beer, they might just not want to drop $15 sight unseen, so...
Now, a $15 bottle of beer. Tell me about it.
It's weird the direction that the craft beer market has gone for a long time. It's been the bombers, the 22-ounce bottles that were really popular. They're easier from a bottling standpoint because you're bottling half as many as you would if you were doing 12-ounce bottles. You also can get a higher price point for a 22 than you could get for a third of a six-pack, even though you know, it's the same amount of beer.
So it doesn't have anything. So it, $15, it meaning it's the quantity that's more.
It would be not a 22-ounce bottle instead of 12-ounce bottle.
So it's not so much like the special ingredients.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you're probably not going to find a Miller in a 22-ounce bottle that's going to cost $15.
So why would I want to buy a $15 bottle of beer?
Well, it kind of depends on what kind of beer do you like. Do you like supporting local economy? And does the story behind the brewery compel you enough to want to be a part of it? And I think that's what we're seeing as the farm-to-table mentality really takes hold more in New Hampshire here, especially when we're surrounded by Vermont and Maine, which have very much had that, and Western Mass to an extent as well. We're now seeing it here where that's becoming a part of everyday people's mentality, is I want to buy produce from my next-door neighbor, the farmer. I want to buy from a brewer in town. I want to support the local folks and not the box stores and the international corporations.
You know, when you just said that, when he just said, you know, think about the brewery, the local brewery, you know, I never thought of it that way, you know, like, you know, sometimes I'll go into Millie's and I mean, I'm not generally a beer drinker. I like it, you know, but, you know, having that mentality of like, you know, thinking, oh my gosh, it's local. They make it here. I want to try their different kind. You know, they always have so many different flavors and kinds. Thinking of it that way,
And that's a piece of the odyssey, I think, for the craft beer connoisseur, is that they are not just someone who's going to go to the same store and buy the same beer that they always buy every time. I think novelty and adventure, for lack of a better word, are kind of a piece of that you want. You know, people will go to Hill Farmstead in the middle of nowhere, Vermont, and stand in line for 3 hours to spend $15 or $20 on a 22-ounce bottle of beer. And that's part of the enjoyment of it, is that they did have to go out of their way, because you can't just go to Shaw's and buy it. So it is more special, because you're not going to do it every day, and not everybody has access to it. So I think that's a piece of it. And the fact that there are local breweries that the people who want to learn more about craft beer and want to be more in touch with a craft process versus a manufacturing process, they want to go to Kelsen Brewery and talk to Eric. They want to go to Abel Ebenezer and talk to Carl. They want to have these experiential things versus just transactional things.
Phone number is 866. That's toll-free, 866-823-1077. Michael, you kind of mentioned the other New England states here just a moment ago, and every survey I've ever seen, New Hampshire is either one or two in per capita beer consumption. Has the craft brew, I guess, demand met that in terms of like other states? We're number one or two overall for beer consumption per capita, but what about craft beer? Is it as popular as the other brands, perhaps, or gaining market strength?
Absolutely. And what we saw for the first time nationally in 2014 was that craft beer as a category outsold Bud Light as a brand.
Whoa.
I bet they didn't see that coming a couple years ago.
So you could say that this one product in InBev's portfolio was outsold by a whole other category made by tens of thousands of manufacturers. But what that means is that people are shifting away. We're now at a point where that critical demographic of 22 to 27-year-olds, a lot of them, they never drank a Budweiser, more than half of them. Their dads probably drank craft beer because there was good craft beer 20-something years ago. Finally, maybe not here in New Hampshire as readily as there would have been in California or other places, but certainly there was enough craft beer where they could be of legal drinking age and having grown up in a household where people only drank craft beer. So I think that's a bit of a paradigm shift. I think we're going to continue to see those numbers grow and the big three numbers condense down. It's a matter of when do we reach the tipping point where there's now too many craft breweries,
right,
and you're going to start to see the weeding of the garden.
What do you think of that? Do you think that there are? Because it seems like they're popping up all over the
country. Oh, they are. There's going to be, I believe the projection was there will be over 60 by the end of next year in New Hampshire alone. This is up from under 15, 4 years ago. So a lot of them are local. A lot of them are only serving in their own tasting room. You can get a growler to go, but they're not distributing to any other that's only on premise. So how big can their footprint be? It can be really deep, but it's not very wide. And then you've got other guys where, like White Birch Brewing in Hooksett, the show that went live today is our interview with Bill Herlicka, the owner-operator, and it's our year follow-up on our interview from last year. And he's now in 13 or 14 states, so he's got a really wide footprint.
Former next-door neighbor of mine.
And he's doing that all from Hooksett, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So it kind of depends on how you want to approach it. There's a lot of guys that I'll never even get to interface with because they're just selling in one zip code. So it's going to take a while before the market gets saturated.
Really interested in something I saw on your website. And we should point people to how they can get your podcast. We've mentioned it, but it doesn't mean anything if we can't get them there.
Well, the easiest way is on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you find your digital content. If you are not somebody who does podcasting, quote unquote, you can go right to our website, which is www.thetaphandleshow.com. And Tim's done an amazing job of laying that out. The most recent episode will be right at the top with an embedded player. So remember that the tape deck and your 86 Camaro, that same arrow button that you see on that will be on our screen, and you press that button, and my obnoxious voice will come out of your speakers.
It's very easy to navigate.
It is.
It really is. I went on it, and, it's right there, right in your face. It's perfect.
So having looked at your website, I saw something about a film that was a Kickstarter-funded called Brew Hampshire, or has some. And I don't know if it's available yet, but it sounded really interesting. Tell us about that.
It's not out yet. It's a company called Slate Roof Films out of Keene. Bryant Narrow and Megan Frappier, and I don't know if she's changed her name because they recently got married. So that was their names as of a couple of months ago. But Slate Roof Films, this is their first full-length feature documentary. They started out by doing what they call a micro doc, which is a little short documentary on a brewery they were associated with on the seacoast called Throwback, and they realized that there was so much more to the scene than one brewery. So they've actually interviewed probably 20 different breweries in the state, as well as some folks that are sort of ancillary. So they've had Bert Bingle from Bert's Better Beers, and they've had us as the Tap Handle Show. They came in and did a show with us, and then they also interviewed us for their movie. And I don't know what their launch date is, but I'm sure the information is all current on Slate Roof. It hasn't come out yet, but I'm assuming it's going to be coming out in the fairly near future, and that's going to be a really cool – they do beautiful cinematography.
They they raised $8,500, which may not sound like a lot, but if you saw all the Kickstarter campaign things that are out there on that website, I would say a fraction of them ever even get anywhere near what they put their requested amount at. So to exceed that, I think they had something like 97 people contributing $8,500. It was well-funded, and I'm sure they used it wisely.
Having been somebody who just is in my last day, actually, of a crowdfunding campaign, it's a lot of work. You get your return right off the bat, and then it diminishes very quickly. So
Unless you got something that tugs at the heartstrings, I've noticed, just people wanting to raise money for personal reasons or business reasons don't seem to get the response. And there's just so many hands out now. How can you fund them all?
Right, unless you're really, really novel. If you're a brewery or a cinematographer, there's lots of other people like you trying to raise money.
Exactly.
So you don't stand out in the crowd. You know, if you have a better widget it's a whole different story. You can raise $100,000 in a day because mm-hmm. everybody wants the first edition of that widget if it's going to be the new the new cool thing on the playground.
How close are you to hitting your mark?
Us? We are at just shy of $4,000 on a $15,000 goal.
Oh, so if, for those that maybe aren't familiar with crowdfunding, if you don't hit it, the money, I mean, nobody gets billed, nothing happens,
right? It depends on which platform you use. Okay. If you use Kickstarter, you are correct. If you use the platform we use, which is called Indiegogo, you can set the account up one of two ways. You can set it up where you only cash out if you reach your goal, or you can let them take a slightly higher cut and you cash out regardless of what you get. So we will still get money off of this. We'll just pay a few extra points for services.
Is this for the brewery that you helped to start?
This is for the brewery, yes.
Okay.
Cool. Well, for those of you just tuning in, we are on, you're listening to Food for Thought, and we have a new segment on Tap with Michael. Michael Hopley-Pierce, host of the Tap Handle Show. We need to take a short break, and you can look him up on thetaphandleshow.com, and we'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Come back. Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. Live at the Beacon Building. Give us a call, 866-823-1077. And we have a new segment every other week on Thursdays on Tap with Michael. And we are in studio with Michael Hopley-Pierce, host of the Tap Handle Show. You can check out more about him at thetaphandleshow.com. And we're talking beer.
All things fermented.
Everybody,
we are talking
that.
Beer. You had me at beer, Carol.
Now, what, it seems like, you always hear, wine was like trending for a while and, all kinds of, wine dinners and wine pairings and stuff. And now you're really starting to hear a lot about food, beer pairings.
Absolutely. And I think I have my own sort of soapbox opinion of why the wine culture is so different from the beer culture. But all of that aside, we really had lack of selection until the last 15 years or so in most marketplaces for beer. So you didn't have 25 different dimensions of flavor like you do with wine. So it was tough to try to conceive of doing a pairing dinner when you didn't have many options to pair with. Now that, Americans have not only rediscovered lost styles or foreign styles that never really had roots here, but they've also invented new styles. The organization that sets up standards for judging homebrews, so they have the categories and all the metrics and all that stuff, they've just re-released new standards for 2015, and there's like 37 styles of beer with a total of about 100 subcategories. So there's really a lot of options out there, and you might not be able to find all of them in your local bottle shop, but if you're in even a decent town, you can probably find more than half of those styles. And I think that because beer does have more dimensions to it than wine does, and it's more of that umami, it's easier to pair with food.
All right, so when you go to a beer tasting, I mean, if you go to a vineyard, you're going to try all different types of wines, yes. What you want to give you about a one-ounce pour, then you spit it out. Same thing when you're tasting.
I swallow it.
Yeah, it kind of depends on how you're rolling that day, I think.
Yeah, but if you know that you're going to be driving it, or you're really a serious beer guy or girl, you going to spit it out? Or
I've never seen anybody do that.
Is that right?
It's lower alcohol for the most part.
So that's where the wine and the beer people part company.
I think so, and I guess because that whole wine culture, I think that came from Napa and Sonoma Valley, where you've got a 20-mile stretch of road that's got 100 vineyards on it. So you know if you drive for half a day, you're probably going to be drinking a lot more than if you're stopping at a couple of breweries. You're also drinking 10, 12, 15%, whereas beer is 5, 6, 9, somewhere.
Well, the movie Sideways certainly kind of brought that to a mainstream, I guess, platform. I don't know if you ever saw it, but it was out probably 10 years ago, and it actually began as a small independent film and just got huge, wide distribution. It had some big names in it. So I'm wondering what the equivalent of that will be someday having to do with beer.
Well, I think you are seeing that the areas that have successful breweries are attracting more people who want to open successful breweries. I look at Derry and Derry Londonderry. Andy Day, who owns Cask and Vine and also owns The Drinkery, which is a bottle shop, really made it an attractive place for people to want to set up breweries, because not only were they pretty near him and downtown, but he was also willing to put them on tap as locals. And so now you have Kelsen, you have 603, you have Rockingham, you have Moonlight Meadery, you have From the Barrel, and they're all within about a mile and a half of downtown.
Wow.
And that those are all, well, with the exception of Moonlight, those are all new companies within the last 18 months. But I think once that seed is planted where the town shows that it's receptive and welcoming to that kind of commerce, people realize there's a lot of opportunity, and it's a great way to sort of revitalize a downtown or bring some, I hate to say manufacturing, but manufacturing back to areas that may not have any anymore.
Can the average person who has just a passion and a love for beer with a few $100 or $1,000 start it in their basement and eventually grow to what these other craft brew people have done?
Oh, you can start cheaper than a couple of $100.
Really?
You can get a Mr. Beer kit, which is a brand.
Mr. Beer kit.
Is that like Mr. Microphone? Because that's what I got as a kid.
All I can think of is Mr. Radar from Spaceballs. I always drink coffee when I'm watching Radar. You know that? Everybody knows that. That's Mr. Radar. Mr. Beer kit's like $40 or $50, and it comes with a fermenting vessel and a couple of cans of stuff that you can add water to and boil and pitch some yeast on, and it's mediocre-ish, but you can get started for $50. And
Yeah,
there's absolutely a lot of opportunity for low dollars. I mean, it's kind of like any hobby. Once you get into it, you realize all of a sudden you got a garage full of gear.
So true.
So, yeah, it's a slippery slope, but for short money on your stovetop, you can make really good quality beer.
I've never been to Incredibrew. It seems like they've been around forever. They seem that they were on the cutting edge of having people come in and make their own concoctions in Nashua.
I wonder if they cycle out their own clientele. I wonder if the people that go there to brew on-premise, because it's an on-premise brewery, so you come in, you use their recipes, you bring your friends, you make the beer, they bottle it, they package it, they put labels on it for you, and you walk out the door with it a couple of weeks later. I wonder if those people grow into home brewers.
Oh, I would guess they do. And actually, we have a guest coming on in about a half hour who has a foodie incubator in Derry where people are home bakers, cooks, whatever. They come in and produce their stuff on her equipment.
Yep.
That's right. And then take it out and sell it. Farmers markets, distribute it, whatever. So it seems like the same concept, although it looks like they did a little bit more at Incredibrew than what you do at the Creative Kitchens that we'll be talking about.
I don't think they're so much trying to incubate commercial breweries. I think they're more giving an opportunity for people who, for whatever reason, can't brew at home. Either their significant other has put the kibosh on it, not that that would ever happen, or they've got a 500-square-foot apartment with a tiny little kitchen or whatever the case might be that's
And there was one that was doing wine like that too, bottling your own wine
in Concord.
And, doing it like that. So it's probably like for, experiment and go in. I would probably want to go check that out. Whoops. We had one of our props just fall.
That was a small display of my powers.
Well, luckily it wasn't a glass trinket or anything, just a chef's coat.
Now, what I'd like to know, Michael, if you were to walk into a beer pub or, a tavern, what type of beer do you order? What is your do you have a favorite beer?
I don't know that I do. My tastes have changed so much over the past 5 or 6 years. I used to.
Is that a curse?
Well, this is going to sound hoity-toity. I am a certified beer judge, and I did go through a 12-week class.
That's like a big deal. It's kind of like a sommelier. Bert was here from Bert's Better Beers.
Yeah. He actually just called me about 3 seconds ago. One of the pieces of that training is learning to really recognize what you're tasting and smelling and identify things. And I had a beer that I used to love, and I just can't drink it anymore.
Okay, so can you go out and enjoy a beer?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, can you kind of just put that blanket there and just say, okay, I'm going out, I'm just going to enjoy beer.
Instead of examining
it.
I can kind of turn the critical analysis piece off. And it's actually at the end of judging a competition, the first thing that everybody wants to do is have a beer and not think about it. Because all you've been doing is tasting a 1 ounce sample and working very hard to fill out a whole sheet with constructive criticism for that brewer to make a better beer the next time. And it's a lot of work. You say, oh, you're just drinking all day. Well, A, you're not drinking enough to even catch a buzz because you're taking 15 minutes to do a 2 ounce sample, and you may do 10 of those over the course of 2.5 hours. So that's like a beer and a half.
All right. So when you're done, why not have a martini?
I guess that's true too. So I can turn that off a little bit, but I still know what I like. My wife and I went to Portland just this last weekend, and I went off to the restroom as soon as we got there and got back to the table, and she'd ordered me a mixed drink. And I was like, oh, that's great, but I guess I'll have to attack the beer menu after I drink the mixed drink, which I did. I'm a trooper.
Carol and I have both judged very high-end chili competitions, and we would clear our palates between each sample with some beer. So how do you cleanse your palate here with about 30 seconds to go?
Crackers.
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 Yeah, usually like saltine crackers.
All right. Good to know.
Well, I think this is going to be an exciting segment. So Michael is going to, you know, give us some topics that we'll do each week. And listeners, if there's some kind of topic that you'd like to hear, you can email me, carol@foodforthoughtnh.com, and go to our website and request it from there. So, Michael, thank you so much. We'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Thanks for having me.
And
good to see you, Michael.
Up next, Linda from Kansas. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.